who want to push it back and say it's 10,000 years old. Well, the obligation to prove is on them because the carbon radiological data argues. You see, there's some tendency in the New Age, which I don't understand very well, that wants to make everything older than it is. You know, the pyramids are 50,000 years old, Atlantis rose and fell 100,000 years ago. The miracle is how new everything is. The pyramids were built day before yesterday. Charlemagne was king of France early this morning. It's all very, very recent. I mean, the emergence of mind out of non-mind is an event practically on top of us. Now let's start it up and we'll get really down to the... Well, yes, in a sense, because you see what happens is when you, it's a built-in mathematical property of this wave that when you get to the end of a big wave, there's, when you get to the end on any scale, there's a sudden drop to the next scale, and then it goes along to the end, and then there's a sudden drop. So if what we're saying is that a universe is made like, a universe that actually had this structure that I outlined for you of 26 levels where each level was 1/64th smaller than the level which preceded it, a universe built on that kind of architectonics would only be halfway through its life an hour and 35 minutes before the end. Do you see how that would work? That in the last hour and 35 minutes, it's going to go through as much development as it went through in the previous 72 billion years. So yes, time is accelerating into, you know, we've gone from barely moving to approaching a staggering speed. And I maintain, you know, that in 2012, the last 6 days preceding the approach to concrescence will be the jackpot. I mean, the laws of physics will break down. Everything will be in a state of visible, motile transformation. This isn't happening in the human world. It isn't happening in our minds. It's a crisis in the structure of physical law itself. And that's why this theory will be hard to disprove or prove until so close to the end date that you'll barely have time to make a telephone call to say whether it's true or not before, if it is true, your telephone call becomes totally irrelevant, you know.
What you're essentially saying is that the fabric of space-time itself is being contorted, twisted,
Yeah, that's right. No, that's right. And if that seems unlikely to you, let's never forget what the Orthodox guys are peddling. They're peddling the Big Bang theory, which says the universe sprang from nothing in a single instance. I would prefer what I call the big surprise cosmology, because it seems to me if you have to have a singularity, the least likely place to find a singularity would be in a featureless high vacuum. If you want to find a singularity, look in a corner of the universe where there are planets, stars, elements, organisms, alphabets, civilizations, minds. In other words, look in a complex domain if you want to find a singularity. That's where you might have some chance of finding it. But finding it in an unflawed nothingness is a strange place to look, even.
It's like one of the arguments maybe being proposed by those on the fringe is that, in fact, it's a very complex universe that's been pushed through a membrane into the singularity, which then creates another entire...
Well, one possibility is that it's a wraparound, that we're not whistling Dixie when we talk about the archaic revival. What history is a finger reaching for the reset button. And when you finally touch it, you find yourself at the moment of the Big Bang. You know, you've actually sent it screaming back to the first moment.
So this is an exercise in holographics, in a sense. That final 6 days is a very pertinent and potent holographic description of the whole baby, the whole...
That's right. And every cycle is a holographic description of the cycles that preceded it.
As we've just seen.
Right. So in 1945, when the bomb flickers into existence over Hiroshima, this is the resonance of the Big Bang. It's being caused by the Big Bang. And the entire life of the universe is then somehow reenacted in the remaining 67 years. In the same way, there was a 4,306-year cycle. We are reenacting that cycle in the present 67-year cycle. We have reached AD 700 right now. I mean, if you wonder why things are so benighted, it's because we're in the heart of the Dark Ages. You wonder why you can't understand the nature of the collapse of the state vector? Well, it's because you have an AD 700 intellectual machine looking at it. My God, the calculus hasn't been invented. Algebra hasn't been invented. The new world hasn't been discovered. These things will all happen ahead of us. Right now, we are in the heart of the Dark Ages. By the late 90s, we'll be closing distance with the Renaissance. Clearly, we have to put up with a bunch of Christer fundamentalism, epidemic diseases, and general not-headedness until we get to that point. But then, after the turn of the century, we can expect the equivalent of Renaissance, the Industrial Reformation, the rise of Napoleon, the Civil War, Adolf Hitler. It'll just be coming quick, 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 quick. And finally, you know, it just pulls you in and everything happens at once. One way of thinking of this is that the entire rest of the future history of the universe is being compressed into the next 20 years.
That's what I was just saying, yeah.
Yeah. But in other words, the heat death of the universe is 20 years away, essentially, is what is being suggested, because time is beginning to accelerate at such a rate that this compression factor is enormous. Okay, now let me see. What have we got? We've got 22,000 years on the screen, and we talked about it, so let me shift here. Oh, no, zoom, yes. Set minimum, no.
Be able to sense this acceleration of time?
Yes, I think, you know, Jeremy Rifkin wrote a book. Anybody read it? What was it called? Nobody read it. It was called... Anyway, the premise of the book was that time is accelerating, but he thought of it as social time, cultural time. I don't. I think it's embedded in the fabric of space-time itself. Yes, I think in a few... You see... You can only react to crises that you understand. So if I tell you the ozone hole is disappearing, you're alarmed. If I tell you an asteroid is going to strike the Earth, you're alarmed. But if I tell you that the Earth is about to collide with a hyperdimensional knot in the nexus of space-time, you know, but that's what's happening. Ahead of us is an enormous speed bump. We are colliding, we're about to collide with something that we can barely cognize. So it's hard to know what to think about it. Yeah.
This may be a little la-la and a bit simplistic, but consider this. You know, we all have experienced this sort of shifting of time and just the experience of one lifetime. You know, as a 2 or 3 year old, the moment as we experienced it seemed to last a longer period of time. I mean, my God, summer has lasted forever and whatnot. We don't have that. And it's sort of, well, that's what happens over the course of a lifetime. What happens if consciousness shifts out to infinity? What happens to the moment then? It becomes vanishingly small, or in terms of the frequency.
It stops. Yeah, well, see.
Before it stops, it's speeding up. In other words, the span is becoming shorter and shorter. Say if you take a second, the second would become shorter. That means, in effect, that the whole process is speeding up until it collapses.
Yes, it's possible that dying takes forever.
Right.
You see.
That's an extra singularity.
and so, you know, you start to die, and then you die and die, and then you realize you're going to die forever and never approach it, because the seconds become stretched into millions of years. It's something like that. It's about, and I think psychedelics are about the fabric of time. When you strip away the hallucinations and the personal reference and the craziness, the bare bones of it are, it's about time. It illuminates what time is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Something I had to add to this is the movie The Highlander. They have a term called the quickening. And I've noticed a lot of people in ecstasy circles on X feel this sense of quickening time. Something approaching when time is quickening towards that end point. And people see more or less on ecstasy to be a lot more empathetic towards that.
Yeah, I mean, see, part of the problem with perceiving what's going on is that we're like mayflies or something. I mean, we live so briefly that to us it looks like the world is standing still. But in fact, staggering amounts of change are going on. I mean, the automobile is 100 years old, for crying out loud. We can't conceive of a reality without the automobile. So, and just in my lifetime, you know, I've seen immense change. So, and this is going to accelerate eventually to the point where I believe they'll hold conferences on the acceleration of time, and boards will be appointed to try and figure out if anything can be done about it, and stuff like that.
I know you have a distaste for quantum physics, but there was a conference apparently last spring in Spain. Actually, it was a conference of astrophysics, I believe, because I heard some of the reports on it. And that, there, a serious topic of discussion was the fact is was the trying to attempt to answer the question, does time exist? I mean, this was being serious, this was on the agenda at some astrophysics conference.
Yeah, time is the great misunderstood or ununderstood quantity in our lives, for sure.
Terrence?
Yep.
You referred to the those Orthodox guys and their Big Bang theory.
Right.
So you reject the Big Bang theory.
I don't necessarily reject it. I just think they shouldn't sneer at me when their theory is so cockamamie. I mean, in other words, I haven't proposed anything weirder than the Big Bang. Saying that a universe can condense itself faster and faster down into a supernovel object sounds to me like a considerably more conservative statement than to say that a universe can spring from nothing for no reason in a single instant. They've cornered the market on the unlikely approach to cosmology.
Do you have any book to refer to as an alternative to that?
To their theory? No, but I'm going to write one.
Well, there's actually been a serious debate on the whole topic. I mean, there was a book recently published in the last year, Did the Big Bang Happen? It was written by another cosmologist.
Well, the Big Bang looked like it was in real trouble as recently as 6 months ago, but the new data from this, is it OGOS 3 or one of these satellites, they finally actually found irregularities in the microwave background. And until they found some irregularities, they were in a real mess because they couldn't figure out how you get from the super smooth initial conditions to the clumpy present situation. Now this new data appears to have pulled their chestnuts out of the fire. But I think the Big Bang may be in need of serious revision. I mean, you have the superinflationary cosmology is an attempt to fix some of those problems, but it gets, you know, there are problems, yeah.
Well, of course, if it's true that this derivation on the teaching doesn't apply, then you would expect small fluctuation in the background radiation because of the fractal nature of what you're talking about.
That's right.
From the very beginning. Also, as an aside, I just mentioned that in the Bible, Jesus said that things would be speeded up in the time of the end.
What did he say exactly?
I can't remember the exact quote, but he in effect said that events would be speeded up in the time of the end.
Yeah. That's absolutely right. If we get a little deeper into this, we can even discuss maybe why he would have said such a thing, because I think we can illuminate it. Here, let's do a little more. We've got 22,000 years on the screen, 11,000 years on the screen, 5,000 and some. This is, in a way, my favorite screen, because this book I want to write, I'm going to call History's Fractal Mountain. And there it is, folks. History's Fractal Mountain. Chatalyayuk is over here in the bottom of this. Along this descending gradient here, like pearls on a string, you get the great ancient civilizations. Ur, Chaldea, Babylon, and Egypt. And this actually, the graph actually confirms the intuition of the theosophical mentality that Egypt did achieve some level of advance that was not surpassed until late Roman times. That there was a tremendous breakthrough on the part of these civilizations. This negative, habitual, or recidivist upward curve is studded with a whole bunch of warlike male dominator civilizations. The Hittites, the Mitanni, the Assyrians, and up here at the top, Mycenaean pirates overwhelm the last outpost of the goddess culture on Minoan Crete. This is Homer, right there. Homer sings his song. And if that to me fits, because I had a professor who once said to me, you want to know where it went wrong? I'll tell you where it went wrong. When these Greeks pulled their boats up on the shore and stopped being fishermen and started talking philosophy, the shit hit the fan. And that's precisely what happened. There it is. You see this steep, steep descent into novelty. And then, after the fall of Rome, oscillation around a mean where it's sort of up, it's sort of down, but there's no real progress until the Industrial Reformation, I mean, in the Industrial Revolution of the 1740s.
Well, that makes sense, because any kind of attempt at descend into novelty or ascend into novelty would have been suppressed by the emerging church at the time, I guess.
That's right. Well, of course, this isn't Eurocentric, it's global. Oh, you mean where is the birth of Christ? Roughly, it's right here. There's a little kind of a choke, and then a very steep fall right afterwards. That's the birth of Christianity, of the Roman Empire versus the Republic, and so forth.
As I read the dates here, I mean, these are all BC numbers, 3600
yeah.
BC. Be right about in there, then.
Yeah, it's sort of
up at that minimum.
Yeah, right about there. Well, let's see. We may get it on the next pass.
It's interesting that novelty has now gone to centered around human civilization.
Yeah, it's bad. It's evil.
You mean as opposed to general species of
development? Why is it human?
Well, it wasn't. At first, it was physical. It was that atomic physics gave way to chemistry, which gave way to molecular biology, which gave way to life. It keeps moving, it keeps being active at the front of the wave, but it leaves a residuum behind it of these previously created structures. Right now, the wave is clearly lodged in our species, while everything else is under the aegis of Darwinian mechanics. We're apparently under the aegis of cultural mechanics.
Well, absolutely. It depends on the intensity of the prominent feature. You know, if a meteor came in the middle of some of this, it would obliterate what you're seeing there, and another feature would stand out in the way.
Yeah, that's right.
Not really being dominant or dictated by human life, but it just so happens that it's
like
the most prominent
thing
feature.
That you're measuring change.
Well,
it's like the quantity being measured changed here.
How so?
The source.
It seems like first we are cosmological, now we're anthropic. And, you know, I'm really...
This is very speculative stuff.
It keeps condensing toward, it builds on complexity. Wherever there is complexity, you will get more complexity. It doesn't build on simplicity. It builds on the last most complex achievement, see? So intelligence rests on animal organization, which rests on cellular biology, which rests on molecular biology, which rests on physio...
I found.
You got it. Okay. Two.
It's another feature that could be clarified by a transformer.
Now, pretty soon, now there is the descent. Here, let's stop and look. The crucifixion is right there. And it's interesting, you know, Christ was an absolute contemporary of Caesar Augustus. So you get this great religious reformer at the same time that you get the great reformer of Roman polity. So two of the most important personalities who ever lived are alive at that point. That, strangely enough, does not win the prize. See this deep little chip here? If we were to blow that up and look at the bottom of that trough, there was a moment when you could have had a dinner party when Lao Tzu, Confucius, Mencius, Pythagoras, and Ezekiel could have all gotten drunk together. Had they been able to find each other, right back there in the immediately preceding the Greek Renaissance. Now, the fall of Rome is in 475, right there. And you see how the time after the fall of Rome is all of a certain general character, clear up to 1700. And then certain technologies and mathematical techniques propel to an even deeper level of novelty. Now, the next screen is the one that I think is probably where we either win or lose you.
Look at the overall shape of that wave. It's clear that there's an overlying principle at work here. I mean, the birth and death of Christ is practically noise on that curve. There's a deep, strong move into novelty, and those superpositions of those events are relatively modern.
That's true.
He was arguing that maybe Christ was the flood.
Well, it just points out that it's not being driven by what we would perceive as these.
No, it's not being driven by these great personalities. They are being driven by it. I'm sure that if you could have stepped into Christ's mind while he was undergoing the passion, the main question he was asking himself was, what is going on? You know, why do I say what I do? Why do I do what I do? I don't seem to be my own person. You know, I seem to be a puppet of some cosmic force, because he was a puppet of some cosmic force. You see, the transcendental object at the end of time is like one of those reflecto balls that hang in discos, you know? And as it turns and spins, it sends off distorted reflections of itself, which ricochet into the past. And if you are correctly situated, it'll turn you into a Christ or a Buddha or a Lao Tzu. If you're not quite correctly situated, it turns you into a Madame Blavatsky, a Meister Eckhart, in other words, second stringers. If you just get a little of it, well, then you're a person with strange insights and great personal charisma, and the people around you love you. We all are very close to this thing. Every night when you dream, you come into the presence of the transcendental object at the end of time. We are all distorted reflections of the last thing. And as we get closer and closer to the eschaton, the last thing, the distortion begins to leave. And you say, my God, it's like watching a photograph from an SX-70 develop. First it's just murk, and then you say, oh, there's a person there, and it's getting clearer and clearer. You know, we are actually being pulled into the attractor. The veils are being parted. the truth is becoming more and more and more imminent. And if in the final confrontation with it, you know, it's the apotheosis. It's the apocalypse, the apotheosis, the apocatastasis, a whole bunch of Greek words beginning with A.
We're all heads.
No.
Well, that would have been the things
we're
going to really carry by. That's Christmas.
Okay.
did you enter a time span in there too?
Well, no, it picked up the time span that we had. See, it just accepted the correction. Thank you very much. Good thinking. Now, is it all right? Yes. Okay, now, this is the screen upon which the theory will stand or fall, because this is the screen that is filled with the history that we know. We're not talking fossil records or Chataljayuk or any of that. We're talking very precise dates. It's saying that there was a very steep descent into novelty around 948 AD. What is this?
What is this? What is this sector again?
1400 years. And this first steep descent into novelty is the intellectual flowering of Islam within the confines of the Umayyad and Abbasid caliphate and the invention of algebra, an intellectual tool that sets the stage for modern science. Essentially, this is the birth of modern science, and you see how steep, sudden, and precipitous it was. Okay, then you go over to this next one. And let me try something here, since this is such a fast machine. See, I'm moving the little pointer, and it's telling me exactly what I'm pointing at. I haven't done this for you before, but this is very good for checking these things.
Oh, to know exactly the date.
To know exactly, yes. We're pointing at the exact date. And I want to get it over here.
Wonderful.
To the bottom of this sucker. Uh-huh. 1121. The First Crusade. The collapse of Fortress Europe. This is the beginning of the globalization of the European mind. We're dead on here. Okay, now the next steep descent into novelty is this one, obviously. Let's go over there and see what it is. There it is. 1430... Oh, no, 1358. I'm sorry, just a minute here. Let me get my ducks in a row. Okay. Do we all agree it's pointing at the bottom of the thing? Yes.
So that's the end of the novel, not the beginning of the novel.
No, that's the densest point of the novelty. It's 1354. What happened in 1354? That's right. One-third of the population of Europe dies in an 18-month period beginning in late 1354. The greatest demographic collapse that Europe has ever experienced. It's an absolute hit, dead on. Now let's go over here to this. Now notice, though, that the recovery is quick. There's a steep descent into novelty and an almost immediate reversion back up to the same level of habit, exactly, business as usual. But this next one is different. It's a steep descent into novelty, and then it really stays down for a long time and explores this. So let's go over to the turning point, which is up at the top.
Terrence, can you cross-reference this with Indian culture and
It's global, but having said that, you have to notice that the world is now dominated by European values and culture. So while we can chart the ebb and flow of the Han Dynasty, at this point, European culture is moving to the fore because European culture is beginning to put its imprint on all of world history.
But you also can't